ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Every year, Australians are told to fly abroad for cancer treatment.
We need this bloody machine.
Then, an exciting pitch.
A proton therapy centre, first of its kind in Australia.
But is it happening?
No one's raising $50 million on Facebook.
This bloody machine, a new investigation. Search Background Briefing Podcast on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
He's a mountaineer and scientist who almost lost his life when researching how quickly the Himalayas are melting. Dr. John Aull says the tragedy in Nepal and Tibet will be repeated as pollution turns mountain ice to water. A week since the catastrophic floods struck the region, we speak to him and pose the question, how soon will the glaciers be gone? I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal Land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily.
A major disaster is unfolding in Nepal after a flash flood near the border with Tibet swept away all in its path.
The death toll in the Himalayan flooding disaster continues to climb, now surpassing 950. Rescue crews are continuing to search for more than 4,000 people who remain unaccounted for, including Australians.
And further danger looms over the already challenging rescue effort with warnings of another deluge.
Just run from where the river is. Someone came running saying, get out. The water's rising and everyone is running this way. It's chaos. People are really, really panicked.
Experts say some workers could have access to oxygen, but others are warning the chances of finding survivors is diminishing.
John, you have ventured into the areas of Nepal where this tragedy struck on numerous occasions for your research, and you were caught up in your own terrifying experience, and we will come to that. But when you saw this unfold, this latest tragedy, what did you immediately think?
To be honest, I was surprised because it wasn't where I would have expected it to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I've always sort of thought about these catastrophic glacier failures as being up at 8,000 meters because, to be honest, 5,000 meters in Nepal at this point is melting out really quickly. And that Langtang Larung area, which was the mountain where the collapse occurred, you know, it's only 5,000 meters, so it feels a lot lower, and it feels like the glaciers, to a large extent, have disappeared from there. So, yeah, I was surprised because it isn't one of the kind of famous mountainous parts of Nepal or Tibet that you would have expected.
Yeah, and you do have friends there who have missing loved ones.
Well, when I climb in Nepal and when I work there collecting data, I've always worked with these seven Sherpa brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've worked with these guys for 20 years and know them all and other families and everything. And yeah, one of the seven brothers was at that Chinese-Nepal border station that so catastrophically was destroyed on the video.
Yeah,
I would imagine looking at where this occurred and the type of event it was, I mean, the casualties are going to end up being in the thousands. And so it's just horrific. And yeah, I don't even know how many people I know that were affected.
Yeah.
It's that kind of a tragedy because it is so going to be so widespread.
Well, John, back in 2014, as part of your research, you had your own terrifying experience.
I fell through that hole. I got trapped here instead. On this ledge, my arm I can't use. I might have to somehow climb out that way.
Probably a bit hard to relive. You did film yourself at the time, but just take me back then and tell me what happened to you.
So first time I climbed Mount Everest was on the north side in Tibet, and it was the first ice avalanche that killed somebody. And this was back in 2009. And then in 2014, on the Nepal side, again was part of an avalanche that killed 16 people, including my team was in the middle of that. I was working with the Nepal government and the university and local partners there to collect data in the mountains to try and trace how fast glaciers are melting. Mm. And unfortunately, my team had been hit. You know, like I said, we had lost a friend. So we were just down to a few scientists and a few skeleton staff. And so I was up at 6,000 meters by myself. And yeah, that's when I fell into the crevasse.
Oh, my right arm is seizing up. I can't use it anymore. I'm going to try and stem above that, get through that, try and head that way. Hopefully I can escape.
So then I had to fight my way out after breaking 15 bones, including like 6 vertebrae and ripping my arm out of socket and everything. So
wow.
Yeah, it was a hard time.
I just got to go a little further. I can do it.
Terrifying, but remarkably, in 2019, you went back, right? And this is all for the science, isn't it? Because of the concern about the Himalayas melting.
Exactly. And it's one of those things that after you almost die and somehow miraculously live, I mean, a lot of people said, oh, you know, God had a plan for you. There's some reason that you survived where most everyone else wouldn't have. And I mean, that's what I do that other people don't do. I mean, a scientist as well as a climber, it's hard to get up to 8,000 meters and collect snow samples. And so after I'd recovered and was sort of re-examining my life after the crevasse fall, I realized that that's, you know, helping people collect this data and training people to do it safely and not fall in their own crevasses. So that's why I went back in 2019, and yeah, we've kept collecting that data every year.
And since then, you have been referred to, John, as the Indiana Jones of climate science. So I just want to understand the science a bit more, though. You put your life at risk to collect samples of ice. So just tell me why, and then what do you do with it? Probably in a layperson's terms, by the way.
Oh, no, totally, totally. Hopefully it's in good layman's terms. The key is most research happens below 4,000 meters. It's just really hard to train your body. And, you know, when you're at higher altitudes than that, collect the data. And so I've actually done a twofold project. The snow and ice is kind of the sexy things people see a lot. But most of the work we do is in high vegetation. So vegetation over 4,000 meters. So we collect a lot of vegetation data, and by collecting it every year or every few years over a 20-year period, you can see how climate change has impacted the vegetation. Mm-hmm. And then how something like changes in park management or increases in population, all those things affect vegetation. So we do the vegetation up to base camp. And then once we're in base camp, that's when we begin collecting snow and ice samples up the mountain, with the idea being to look and see what the snow is collecting. And the way I kind of explain it is, if you leave a glass of water out on the table in your house for like 2 weeks, it kind of collects the dust that's there. And snow does the same thing. And so we can analyze that dust. We've looked at things like near a strip mine in Peru. Is there heavy metals? Is there arsenic? Is there lead that's being released by these mines? And we find there's huge amounts of it. Mm-hmm. And then in terms of the Himalayas, we're looking at something called black carbon. And black carbon's from incomplete combustion, so fires that burn at like cooler temperatures. Mm-hmm. And so the two main sources are either like forest fires or agricultural fires, or what we call fossil carbon, which is fossil fuels. And that really accelerates the rate at which glaciers melt. And we've measured how it like is doubling the rate if you're near a place that gets a lot of pollution versus a place that doesn't. The glacier, we've measured it melting twice as fast.
Wow. And so given what you found through your research, how does that play into what we have seen now?
Well, so it's kind of twofold. The work I'm doing in terms of measuring glaciers is lived by a lot of people who spend time in the mountains, especially mountain climbers, because it used to be the glaciers were thick. And when they were thick and healthy, they're just safer. Mm. If it's a shallow, thin glacier with lots of rocks underneath it, it's all broken and full of crevasses and crumbling really easily, and heat can get down to the bottom of it, and so it can be heated from the bottom. That fracturing of the glacier makes it hard for climbing. It kills climbers, but it also means that it's more likely to break on the side of a mountain. And occasionally you have massive features break off and fall down. And so that's what happened in this case.
Yes.
It essentially was a glacier about 1,000 meters or more above the valley. And when it all came off at once, looks like the rock itself broke and the entire glacier came off. And essentially what happens is it falling over 1,000 meters, basically you're converting that kinetic energy into heat that instantly turns it from a ice, a solid, to a liquid. And it's full of all that energy, and so it just blasts down the mountain.
Wow. And there's no warning for the people below. I mean, there was no warning.
Oh, no, totally. That's why I expect the casualty, unfortunately, as tragic it is, there's just so many people in Nepal that are not be found.
Yes.
And the reason the Nepal one is worse than a lot of other places is because that valley, the Bota Valley, is very narrow and deep. And so if it's a wide valley, the floodwater can spread out and the energy gets spread out. But when it's narrow like that, it gets channeled and it gets accelerated. And so it just makes it move faster and faster and more powerfully as it's descending. And there's just no escape because it's a narrow valley. There's nowhere to run to the sides.
All right. Well, John, let's consider how quickly the Himalayas are melting and what, if anything, can be done at this point to stop that and protect the residents in the areas. Now, tell me, can this decline, I'm sure this is what scientists are working towards, but can it actually be stopped?
No, unfortunately not at all. I mean, it's not unless, as long as we use fossil fuels, that temperature is going to go up and the cryosphere is going to be damaged, unfortunately. And so we have to think in terms of adaptation.
Wow.
And what we can do. And thankfully, that's one of the first things that the government has said in Nepal is, well, we recognize that they had started, more and more people were building in the floodplains of the rivers. It used to be that in Nepal, because of floods, people lived 100 meters up on the slopes, and they would walk down to the river, plant their crops, and then walk back up the hill to their house. But now, with tourism and so forth, everyone wants to be along the river, and so that farmland has been replaced by, you know, little hotels and restaurants and things like that to service the trekking industry along the, you know, because there's water there and it's just prettier and it's nice. But unfortunately, it's where the catastrophe is going to strike. And so it sounds like the government has recognized that, and they've been saying that they're going to reestablish flood boundaries and not let anyone develop in those flood boundaries in the future.
So things will need to change, people will need to move. But as a scientist, it must be quite frustrating, you know, with everything that's occurred in the last week or so. Would you, John, ever go back again to the Himalayas? Will you continue this scientific work?
Yeah, of course, I want to go back just to, you know, see my friends and mourn our lost brother and so forth. But it also is, the question is, how fast are the glaciers going to melt, and where are they going to melt, and where are the problem areas? If anything, there's more need for research, because you really have to start looking at individual locations. All the planning you want to do and all the responses, environmental responses you want to do, require data. And it really requires that high elevation data in particular. And so, yeah, this tragedy is... If anything, it spurred me to go back as soon as possible.
Yeah. And is there an answer to that question, the question of how fast the Himalayas will melt.
5,000 meter glaciers, which is where this glacier fall occurred, was roughly 5,000 meters. Those, they're disappearing, and that's, they will be gone in the next 10, 15, 20 years. And so then you start thinking about 6,000 meter glaciers. How long do they have? 7,000 meter glaciers. And the Himalayas, because they're mid-latitude, because there's so much pollution being deposited upon them, which we've measured, those 5,000 meter glaciers and then 6,000 meter glaciers, unfortunately, are accelerating in their losses and are going to continue accelerating and become more and more unstable.
Dr. John Orr leads the America Climate Science Program, a non-profit organization. This episode was produced by Ilaria Brophy. Audio production by Louise Marlin. Our supervising producer is Sydney Peed. I'm Sam Hawley. Thanks for listening.